working?
Yeah.
Sound like it's working.
Thank you very much, Ludmila. First time I met Ludmila, she said something very nice to me, which touched my heart. And tomorrow there will be a, tomorrow's a workshop. There's a work, I'm giving a workshop at some point. And I promised Ludmila I would make her a sculpture. So if you want to see what that sculpture is, then come. Is this going to work? I see dead time. Are you sleeping vigorously or are you hearing? Now, I don't know if this works. Okay, what do I do? I just say left, right. No, that doesn't work. Is this the right one? Okay. So how do I control this remotely? So I like to walk around. But this doesn't seem to be doing anything.
If you want, if you tell me
about that one. Okay, just tell me which one to do.
This is what I meant.
Oh, I guess I can manage that. It's not advancing. It's froze up. Okay. So much for computers. Fortunately, I brought some stuff here. Anybody recognize this item here? Afterwards, you can come up and touch this. Anybody recognize this?
Is it Hershey's Kisses?
No. Right. Yeah. Zero. Right.
Half of a connected set of projection points.
That's pretty close. There's an infinity. This is zero to infinity. All right. There's nothing flat. this is the Coons Award given by SIGGRAPH every 2 years. Anybody here go to SIGGRAPH? There you go.
Used to.
Well, there's a piece of SIGGRAPH here. So it's a career award. I suppose it's mostly to those people who provide us with things like Pixar. But Coons was pioneers. Coons Patch is probably the most fundamental thing in all of these Pixar films. Anybody have a favorite Pixar film? This is interactive here. Toy Story, yeah. Anything else? You like The Incredibles?
Wally.
Finding Nemo.
I thought Wally was incredible.
Guys, it's a mess. Especially in Greece. So Coons celebrating a little piece of Coons algebra. Mathematically,
that goes, that is right arrow.
Not that big a deal. You just interpolate a bunch of curves. In this case, I interpolated through infinity. This one here. This is a mathematics award, play mathematics award. First guy that got one of these was Sir Andrew Wiles. And I said, Andrew, you have figured out the most difficult possible way to get one of my sculptures. Do the rest of you know why these gentle persons are laughing? Andrew Wiles solved Fermat's last theorem for a hero problem. That's one way possible. Yeah, one of my sculptures. Okay, I also have got My Beautiful Wife has written a book, which is now out of print. I've been informed you can get them on eBay for $750. We can talk if you want. And I brought a couple of printing presses. This is a Piano Gilbert algorithm printing press, and then this has got my web stuff on it, so if you take this rubber band off and stamp it on your wrist, I'll let you out of the building. And then you can come back in. Are we ready?
This is left and right.
Okay. Now, do I have to be in a special place to have this work? Now, Ludmila left out a lot of stuff in the introduction. She didn't say that I was a computer designer, a computer architect. Okay? This is one of the computers that I architected. What is it? It's an abacus. What kind of abacus?
Binary
abacus. I made some of these with large blocks to give to our grandchildren. So they're learning from a tender age, you know, how to compute. Anybody recognize the number on there? This is, I've never seen one before. I think it's a really good idea. This brings us to a certain point, you know. What's sculpture? Well, this is an arithmetical engine. What's the simplest possible arithmetical engine? For me, sculpture has to be something that's primitive, that you can perceive it in just about 8 seconds, which is our normal attention span, an unusual thing. But this is lacking. We're in the 21st century. We have electricity. So I architected another computer. You recognize those? Now, the thing about this computer is it's independent of any power source other than your digits. So you operate it with your digits. It's really pretty therapeutic. And I took these plate switches. And, of course, tore out all the electronics, because who needs that stuff? And then mounted these things. It's a really nice little abacus with this. You know, they go pop, pop, pop.
I'm just trying to determine what the number is.
You are?
These are my binary digits.
Yeah. What is it?
That many. I got to convert it to decimal.
This is a very bad sign. You won't.
Four plus 8 plus 64 plus 512.
I'm as old as dirt, but you are not one of my grandchildren. Okay. Umbilic torus, NC. This is one of my first, pieces that involved a milling machine. This thing seems to be coming on and off. Are you sure y'all, everybody that wants to hear me? This is a piece of bronze, but before it got to the bronze stage, an awful lot had to happen. I used a three-axis milling machine to articulate the surface. And the surface is a piano Hilbert curve. In fact, I used a milling machine to build this printing press. And I'll print you out a unique piece with its own edition number. Like that. This has been on the cover of a number of calculus books. Anybody seen it on a calculus book? I met a young woman who's had it on her calendar, and she said, it's the only way I got through that. Okay, the umbilic torus is a structure which has an outside and inside. In fact, here are a couple. Does this have a laser thingy on it? Okay. Here's the one you were kind of just looking at Carrara marble now. And here is the outside. So, the inside. This has a triangular cross section, which is a hypocycloid with one cusp. Not a triangular cross section. Hypocycloid. This has to do with the fact that the origins of this piece are in the business of fundamental representations. GL2 are action on binary cubic forms. It's a stratification. Yeah. Okay. So, three times the long way. Once the short way. Here, once the long way, three times the short way. So this one I call the, okay, which is it? This is the quiz. Yin or yang? Which?
Both.
Why? Why both?
Because it seems to interpolate something that goes from one or to another.
Okay. The yang part, that's this one. Well, you can see I've got some symbols here. Here is a parametric presentation of the cross section. And then here is a symbol that you find on doors. The other don't open that door. Now here's this one. This is the outside. So each is the inside out of the other. Okay? Each is the inside out of the other. And here the symbols are correspondingly different. Now the only difference between this parametric part and the previous one is that minus sign. Symbolic, what would you expect? Now how did I make those? Well, I projected a certain class of parametric 3D equations into these two blocks for our marble. What I have here is a big hairy arm. Well, okay. See these cables? I'm standing in the middle of a triangle. This is a Stewart platform. The Stewart platform is attached to a computer. Which I communicate with the guts of this computer with this probe. As I touch the stone at a certain point, and it tells me how far it's drilled, or cut, or whatever I'm doing. In other words, I'm going from this virtual equation, image, whatever, into the blocks. Why would I do that? Well, here's another piece where I've actually got the two linking together. So here's the, there's the yang part, here's the yin part, but you can see that they're duped together in a curious way. How did I do that? This is not marble. Anybody recognize the material here?
3D prototyping
machine. Rapid prototyping machine is cornstarch. Now, with these rapid prototyping machines, how big can you get? Yep. Not too big. But you don't get to take my favorite piece of 10-foot stone, quartz diorite, stick it in this rapid prototyping machine. Now he said rapid. I guess I could be the members of the audience, right? If I tag you in this thing. That might be a good idea. Just attempt to point to this person and that person. Okay.
So that's a problem for me as a sculptor. Two problems. First problem is, how do I make something bigger that is people size? How do I make something which is out of a material that I really love to work with? Something that's a billion years old. Now, a billion years old, that's suitably aged stone. Now, part of my design language is mathematics, algorithms, if you will. And that is kind of timeless. So from this rapid prototyping environment, I make that. Not everybody has been to a bronze foundry. Just to give me some idea, how many people have gone through bronze casting processes? Three? Six? Okay. You ready? Pour it out of your mind. You don't mind. Okay. First we make a positive image. And then we're going to make a mold of that. Pull these waxes. See the Bunsen burner there? There's supposed to be a flame there. That wax goes into this shell room. This is stirred 24/7. Then you hang it up like a bunch of bats in a cage to dry out. Here we're looking under the skirt of the kiln because we're going to take the ceramic material and then vitrify it. After it's vitrified, we bury it in sand. Fill this crucible full of molten bronze. And then after that's done, you see a little bit of the bronze exposed here. Just smash, take a hammer and smash off this ceramic shell material. So we've gone from positive form, positive wax, negative mold, right? And then, negative. Primary positive form, negative mold, positive wax, negative ceramic shell, and finally, positive bronze peeking through there to get something like this. Zero to infinity and nothing flat. Well, before you get there, you got to get all kinds of stuff done. That's a sandblaster. It's like a face, you know. It's not upside down there. You put your hands through the eye sockets here. You grab your piece and blast it with a sand. And then you cut off all the extraneous things. I'm leaving a lot of things out. And you may add a little bit of welding to the bronze. We've been casting bronze for 10,000 years. And then you do a patina, or you polish it. Pretty ugly looking equipment. Yep. So there's our Coons patch, the other side. When people get these things, I engrave them for them. But still, that's not very big in some respects. And if I've got it for my life, then how do I make it bigger? I have a CRADA, Cooperative Research and Development Agreement, between my studio, which is now in Baltimore, Maryland, and NIST, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, in Petersburg. These are your tax dollars at work. They don't pay anything for some pretty wonderful things. Now you see, what have I got there? There's a little thing there. See the thingy there? That's a piece of sculpture. I want to enlarge it. First thing I do is tape it up. Now this is a movable pair. Each of these things rotates inside and out the other. It's a dynamical piece, if you will. All this moves. So I've got it taped so it won't move. Why? This is another Stewart platform arrangement, NIST. And this guy here is a freaking genius. That's Jim Albus. He's a NIST fellow.
And I didn't know he was a freaking genius. Like, Tiger, I just thought he was the greatest engineer I'd ever worked with. So he builds these kind of Stewart platform things. Now, there's my handy hydraulic hoist. Sitting on there is a block of what?
Styrofoam.
Yeah. I was hoping somebody would say marble. Now, here Jim has got his hand over there on the actual thing. So it's hooked up to a chainsaw. See the chainsaw? Now this Stewart platform just kind of dances around according to how you move your hand, how you pour it around. Isn't that interesting? You ever seen anything like that before?
Yeah.
Down at the local Home Depot. So here we're carving out, you can sort of see that form beginning to emerge. But in principle, remember that Villa Torres piece that has a little ball sign? Especially the yin one, you know, very suggestive balls. Those are registration points. They're not what you think.
And how big is that block to start from?
This? Oh, it's about 2 feet, right? Let's see, about 3 feet this way. Okay. 2.5 feet that way. It's about that. Not very big. This was a kind of a test piece. But you can see the rotating tools here. We tried a whole lot of different things. Okay, anyway, making stuff. In principle, I could use that to carve stone. In principle, you know, they call these rapid prototyping machines. You know why? Rapid. Humans have this incredible propensity. Just flat out lie. There's nothing very rapid about it, especially when you count all the time. It goes into programming. Okay. Well, here's a fractal. Snowflake curve. I've done a couple of bronzes that are sort of interesting. What are these? Okay. If you take that fractal snowflake, stretch a membrane over it, and pump it, you've got a drum now. What will emerge? Well, we don't know, because a fractal is an infinite construction. How do you solve the Dirichlet-Laplace equations for a fractal boundary? The time this is done, and it had never been done before. A couple of texts. Of course, once you do Dirichlet boundary conditions, meaning fix the function, fix the membrane on the boundary, then this is F sharp, in case you ever wondered what F sharp looked like. But suppose you do Neumann boundary conditions, solve that. Now here, the boundary is allowed to move. And when you move the boundary, it's kind of like looking at something on Joe. So what do we have? A drum? Joe. How far do we have to go? Now, this part of the talk, I don't think any of you have ever seen before anything quite like this. This is a piece at Hamilton College. It's located outside the Science Center, which, for the benefit of all concerned, is a very green building. Well, I guess you can see it's sort of green. This is a very green sculpture, believe me. This is granite. There are two colors of granite here. They're each about a billion years old. Suitably aged material, I'd say. And we have a couple of hyperbolic disks. This one is the Poincaré model of hyperbolic geometry. This one is the Klein model. The Klein model of hyperbolic geometry. What's the difference? Here, geodesics are given by arcs of circles that are perpendicular to the boundary of the disk. there, it's not conformant. Now there are two kind of pyramid things here. One is for Venus, kind of curvy. Mars, kind of angled. But not the Venus, not the Mars that you know or think you know. This is based on an algorithm created by the Mayans 400 years before Kepler to predict the behavior of Mars. I'll summarize their algorithm in a minute. This piece is called syzygy. Y'all know this word, syzygy? Who wants to spell it? In public.
S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y.
That's what happens when you talk to a computer literate group. What does it mean?
Coincident or aligned?
Aligned with planets.
And as you can see, these two pyramids line up. You walk around the sculpture. That's a beautiful word. Does anybody know what it means in the original Greek? I'll let you reflect on that. Reflect on your the Greek you learned at your mother's knee. These two people are both friends of mine. She's also a bona fide genius. She deciphered the Dresden Codex and Mars Continent. She's a Mayan lithologist. Vicki Bricker, this is Harvey Bricker, her husband. And this piece originated because partly when I was commissioned to do the piece, I knew these two people before for many years. And it was about the time of retreat. And I thought, they lived in two homes. And New Orleans is having a hard time. So I wonder where Harvey and Vicki are. Now the theme of the sculpture had to do with Hamilton College, which was my old alma mater, actually. And at the time I was there, it was an all-men's school. This is a Mayan cornfield. And Venus, so what they did to kind of make it possible to integrate the college, built a women's college across the road. It was called Curtin. And it was up there for 8 years. And I thought, that's a wonderful coincidence. After nine, what does 8 years have to do? Somebody want to answer that question? 8 years have to do with Venus? Well, four. What's that got to do? Well, the Olympics are held every 4 years. That's a Venus festival. How many rings are there on the Olympic logo?
Why?
No.
It takes 5 years for Venus to be in the same position as ours.
You.
Hey.
Isn't that remarkable? I thought that was pretty remarkable. But it turned out that Harvey and Vicki, I found when they were in Texas. This is the height of Katrina. I was kind of worried about it, but you could see, they may be pretty vulnerable down there to hurricanes. And found out what they were doing. And they had a paper in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
in which they talked about what compliance is. Now, the Venus material in the four codices known, you know, Bishop Lambda was busy down there when they first moved in on the Mayan culture, burned everything in sight, and only four of these codices survived. And the Venus component was, that code was cracked early on. So what do we have here? Mars. Nobody knew what that stuff was about. So I built this sculpture based on it. Here's a, I'll let you reflect on that. Sex, even human sex, continuum. So here's Venus there, somewhere around zero. And here's the crux of the story. What were those Mayans up to? Now, when Harvey and Vicki and Tony Benny wrote that paper for the Proceedings of the National Academy, they did not use the language I'm about to use. Here's what the Mayans were up to. They took a free group on a two generator. They discovered some relation on this free group. Free group consisted of long cycle, short cycle. And they discovered, this is for, now which, are we on? The Klein model? So naturally this goes with Mars. By the way, it's Mayan Venus and the Mayan Mars were not anything like Mars. I don't know if we can hear it. Venus and Mars. Not appetite, no. They decided to want to have a war. They were very bloodthirsty. I think they're both, if anything, male. So, this is a word, long and short, in this first group. And they found that they can interpret the orbit of Mars in exactly these terms. And that was their output. Produce a word on a group. Now, a lot of our algorithms have to do with exactly that. So here's Syzygy. Line it up. So please say goodbye to Syzygy there in front of the nice green building and the fire hydrant. Okay, here's another piece. This brings us to the negative Gaussian curvature part. I actually used the milling machine to develop this piece. And again, you can't get very big on a milling machine. These nine pieces, that's the D4 symmetry, they compose into this pair here. Anyone recognize the underlying mathematical surface? First non-trivial topology of a minimal surface. That's by the name of Costa surface. Celso Costa was a graduate student. Nobody told him this problem had not been solved since the time of Euler. Good thing to have graduate students. Good thing not to know him. So here is a Mathematica version of that. Now, generally, the way I use tools like Mathematica is to present stereo pairs. So you can see here it says right. I left out the left. How do you use stereo pairs? It's great, right? You can visualize stuff. And you have a virtual studio there. You can try a lot of things. What are computers most good for today? We're trying to talk about virtual studio context.
Pre-visualization?
Yeah, why?
There's no cost.
There's no cost, right?
And there's a small upfront cost.
Yeah, there's a big capital cost. But there's something else about it. you're thinking about that something else. Don't you always love the blood of love? That's all supported by Todd. This is a torus. It's a triply punctured torus. Why am I sculpturally so interested? Well, I was going to say what computers are good for. They're good for disproving things. They're really good at that. Not so good at proving things. But you can decide what you don't want to look at. So I did one of these forms in snow. Beautiful story on this snow piece. This is 10 feet by 10 feet by 12 feet. Okay. 3 meters by 3 meters by 4 meters. And that's not very thick, you know, as snow goes. But it's in a negative Gaussian curvature form. Now, at the moment, as I look out over the audience, most of you are presenting positive Gaussian curvature. By me, right? It's part of the positive, right?
Sure about that?
Positive curvature, right? So, we're taking parabolas, both tails of the parabolas are down. For an orthogonal set of parabolas. The product is positive. Okay, now, Rolf, would you stand up? Since you've been so good at it. Now, tip your head. Now, right here, taking liberty with the person, this is negative curvature. So here's the parabola, tail is down, here's the rough. Positive times negative is. When I give workshops, I usually encourage. Take off your shirt, get a magic marker, and get a quiz. Okay. So, after this was done, you get 4 days to do this sort of thing. This is Breckenridge, Colorado. They had a heat wave of 45 degrees. There were 16 sculptures there at this particular event. And they all imploded except month. And it became thinner and more graceful. But it still held together. You can put your fist through it and it would still have this structural integrity. Now why is that?
The negative curvature.
Negative Gaussian curvature. Say it.
Negative Gaussian curvature.
It's a very, very powerful idea. A saddle form. Now I did that snow. I had an agenda. I wanted to do a big granite piece, but I had to do the snow piece to convince somebody to pony up. So here in my studio in Baltimore, you can see some of my equipment there. You know, you always need a pair of calipers. Now right here is a dike that I built around this block, originally 11-ton block of quartz diorite out of black. And I have a diamond chainsaw that I do the cutting with, a lot of water to keep the diamonds cool, and that fills up here, settles out, and then water infused with Brownian motion particles of diamond. Then I shovel into the Chesapeake Bay. That's my special contribution to the crabs. This is diamond dust. Okay? Well, you can see my diamond chainsaw there poking through. Former student of mine, I taught a course in qualitative mathematics in this. You never know. It's kind of emergency. he's built to be flat done. In fact, here's a whole family up there. You can come up through the center. Here's a piece loaded on a truck. Here I am. See this man? He's smiling. He just had some amazing adventures going through the state of Wisconsin. So here's the piece. It's all blocked up on this truck. And you know, we'd be tooling down the road, and people would come up next to us. And they'd be sitting there for a while, you know, at our 3 o'clock or at our 9 o'clock, you know, just trying to figure out what on earth that was. And then they'd say to themselves, oh, yeah, negative Gaussian curve. You don't think so? You don't?
No. You don't know Wisconsin.
You never underestimate the people that be on the highway. Okay. Now, here's this is Brian over here. This is Edelman. We're hooking up this, this is a 75-ton crane. We're going to put this in position in St. Paul, Minnesota at McAllister College. It's outside the Olin Rice Science Hall. Notice that Edelman is dressed in his Alaska Pipeline overcoat. I got on a sail somewhere. Brian here is a rigger. You know what a rigger is? He's somebody that, you know, puts harnesses around things so they don't get out of control. Brian there is used to 15 degrees below zero. Okay, here's the piece in transit. Brian did his work well. As you can see, Brian was a cool dude. And here's the piece there. This is a hardy bunch of people there in Minnesota. It's 15 degrees below, you know. They're standing around like it's California sunshine.
Was Stan a member of their team? Stan Wagon was a member of the snow team.
Stan Wagon is right there. He was a member of the snow team. Stan Wagon also was the patron. The reason I did that stupid snow carving was, well, I think of snow as snow. But in some respects, it's a lot like snow. Like stone, does not have much tensile strength. You don't get to do this sort of thing with snow. Or with stone. The Greeks and Egyptians found that out. That's why they have so many pillars and everything. Yeah, that's Stan right there.
How much did the sculpture weigh? Is this the 11 tons there, or is that less?
I started out at 11 ton block. Okay. Got it down to 3 tons. So, negative Gaussian curvature for active space. And this is designed for people that crawl through. On the crawl through business, the legal department of McAllister College was quite concerned because people were crawling through it. Kids were showing up from the campus, getting their pictures taken, crawling through this rock. They finally just gave it up. Well, that was by design. Because as I pointed out in the practice, our bodies are mostly negative Gaussian curvature. We didn't go into detail. Okay. Now, what is this? It says algorithm on it. This is the navicular bone algorithm. My wife had a problem with her foot. As you can see, it's a problem. And she was not going to be able to ever walk or dance again. And we thought that was no way to live. So she found this marvelous surgeon in Baltimore who shone. We attended a kind of symposium, he and his foot and ankle idea was to kind of create an algorithm. Now, I think there's a paper in the works somewhere. I don't know if it's appeared or not, but this was the navicular bone algorithm. This is marble. This outside structure, which is what the algorithm has to do, and these intersecting planes. Going back to the navicular bone, it's a fairly vulnerable bone that breaks, cracks, causes the person a lot of pain, like they can't walk. This is not my particular problem. But you get one and only one chance to install a screw to fit that bone together. So I have here a copy in marble of the navicular bone. And we've rotated it around, so you see these quadrants. And basically, that's the way these surgeons do this decision about where to put the screw. It's a question of orientation. Mathematically, think about, you know, Grassmannian manifold around this particular bone, and you got it. Okay, now there's a beautiful fountain. This is in Maryland, at the Maryland Science and Technology Center. This is Lake Divinacci. Lake Divinacci. This is the Fibonacci Fountain, and the water cannons are located at Fibonacci numbered counts. So I'm celebrating here the Fibonacci sequence, this two-term recursion, which is pretty fundamental stuff. I have a question generally, I'm talking to Arabists, cuneiformists, all kinds of other people. Was Fibonacci, Leonardo of Pisa, the first guy to come up with this sequence? Nobody seems to really know the answer. I have my own ideas about it. But this fountain, is by coincidence, I installed this fountain about 800 years to the day of the publication of Liber Abaci, which revolutionized arithmetic. Bunny rabbit problems. Now the geese, a lot of geese in Lake Fibonacci. They kind of like this mountain. I think it's a big mother goose or something. I don't know. The Fibonacci numbers are ridiculous. Here's a two-dimensional piece I did. The amazing figure five in the hyperbolic plane. There's a painting by the painter. And I cribbed his fire. Here's the a profile of the fountain, and as you can see, we've got steps here. Now, on a computer, it's a really easy matter to just, you know, lay out equal thicknesses. And then position the water cannons there. It's an essential singularity. But it's another matter when I've got 100 slabs of stone that come out of a stone wall. So, and the only thing they can guarantee for specs is that they're 4 inches thick. That 4 inches may be a little more, but less than 4.5. So how do I solve the problem of making sure that the layers in these are the panels. Each one of those is 1,500 panels. Those panels, right, have to line up. How do I do it? Pigeonhole principle. Very fundamental thing in mathematics, especially number theory. There's the distribution. And sure enough, all less than 4.5. Bigger than 4. So I can get the accuracy on the slab within a 64th of an inch if I just pick the right slabs. This made me a believer have anything to do with the Fibonacci numbers? This one just about blew me away when I was discovering this. What does this have to do with Fibonacci numbers? Well, we've got a group in plane. This is the reflection group. These are right angle pentagons. This is the checkerboard of pentagons. You can play checkers on it. Where did the Fibonacci numbers come from? That really freaked me out. So I thought the Fibonacci numbers were worth celebrating. There's one of those 1,500-pound slabs dropped down by a crane. This guy here, that's me. I'm scared out of my wits. I got to dwell with heights. But do what you can. So there it is with the profile and all. Beautiful fountain. What's going on here? Look at that fountain. Look at that fountain. What happened to my beautiful fountain? No. Summer, July. 3 years after I made the fountain.
After a while, draw with it.
Okay. I like that analogy. And that means
you can do a snow sculpture without having your...
I kind of like that analogy, too. another analogy. People that work with virtual environments. It's a completely different thing if you have had studio experience when you come to that virtual environment. A friend of mine was now a scuba instructor. And he said, after you have been certified and comfortable in this three-dimensional environment. And then when you look at these movies by Jacques Cousteau and people like that, they'll be a completely different experience. And that's the way it is with painters and artists, I think. If you don't have that studio experience, it's a haptic, hands-on thing. Then the pictures that are on the screen will result in the same thing. When you may have created the software. You agree? Hey, you agree?
In this sense, but not
in a sense?
But not in every argument. You mentioned about the negative cost in the future. As the non-pursuit of behavior, the extreme part of the strength.
But it helps. I agree with what you said. Part. Go
but the positive cost in future doesn't say X, you know, they are very stable, and walls, buttons to color, you get those are very expensive, but they are not so beautiful. So the argument should be more. They are equally strong, but more beautiful. And it deserves something because you can change.
Why?
Because we don't see them every day.
You're covered with
them. Right. That's right.
Topologically, what is the human thing? That is true. Humans are toruses, right? And these negative Gaussian curvature forms are triply punctured toruses. When we shake hands, we're going to shake hands entirely. No quiet touch. Now that big stone sculpture, space between the two hands. Now, when we shake hands, we meet somebody for the first time. First time, right? We get really intimate, press our negative Gaussian curvature apart. So, our bodies are primarily made up of almost negative Gaussian curvature. Most people don't have this language. Weeks ago, I gave a ceramic sculpture workshop. So we did. They did the curvature. They were doing these human figures. Open their eyes.
More questions? Yeah.